Okay.
Good afternoon, everyone. Allison Scobert here, Consolidated Planning Group. We are super, super excited to be back with Dr. Temple Grandin today. Today's format is going to be a little bit different than what we typically do. This is going to be a Q&A with Dr. Grandin today, and questions have been previously submitted. First things first, I want to say that we have far more questions that we'll possibly be able to get to today, but we're going to do our very, very best. And if we need to have another session another day, then we will definitely schedule that. So I just want to chat a little bit more about Temple and talk a little bit about her background. I know that Temple is not a stranger to many of you. I know that for many people, Temple, you've really been an inspiration to a lot of parents and a lot of professionals and people themselves on the spectrum. Temple herself is on the autism spectrum, and she has done great, great things with her life. She is a professor at Colorado State University. She is a well-known author. She has been named one of the top 100 most influential people in the world in the heroes category. She had a movie, the Temple Grandin movie, that was subject of the Emmy and Golden Globe winning biographical film. It was an awesome movie. And if you guys haven't seen that movie, I encourage you to check that out on the HBO network, the Temple Grandin movie. She has another movie that is coming out, The Open Door. It is a new movie, you know, kind of based on her work at Colorado State University. But one of the things that that Temple is very well known for is the transformation of the humane treatment of the livestock and how cattle go to slaughter. She changed the industry and across the country, in the U.S., across the country, on how cattle go to slaughter. Temple's known for seeing things in pictures. We have different learners. We're going to talk about some of that today. But she sees things in pictures, and her mind is a brilliant mind, and she's done great things with that as a result. So a couple of things that I want to mention to you, if somebody wants to type this in the chat box for everybody, that'll be great. There is her website, templegrandin.com, and she's got a lot of great advice for parents on that website, so you might want to check that out. She has, and also on her website, you can learn about the books that she has. There's like 17 plus books out there. One of her most recent books is Visual Thinking. So I'm sure she'll talk about that a little bit today. She's got A Guide to Your Brain, and this is more pictures for younger readers. And then she has a book that is called The Way I See It, What Parents and Teachers Need to Know. So you'll want to check those things out. So without any further ado, we're going to go ahead and get started. Again, there's many, many questions. Today's webinar is being recorded. Anybody who registered for this today is going to get an email with a copy of the slides. Temple doesn't have slides herself today. It's just our slides, but you're going to get a link to the recording so you can play back on this as well. If you submitted a question and we don't get to it today, don't take it personally. We're just doing it as much as we can during the time frame. From a housekeeping perspective, we are in webinar mode. And what that means is that we can't see you or hear you, but we do know that you are out there, and we are glad that you are here with us today. So having said that, I'm going to get started. And I want to start early on, Temple, with talking about early childhood. You know, our audience today, we have a wide audience of professionals, of parents, of all ages, of kids on the spectrum. They may have ADHD or comorbid conditions. And we may have parents on here that are reeling from a brand new diagnosis. And, you know, we know that early intervention is important. Can you talk to us about early childhood and some of the things that happened in your life that caused you to be as successful as you are today, and some tips for parents that maybe just have a brand new diagnosis?
I uh, I cannot emphasize enough the importance of early intervention. You have 2-year-olds, 3-year-olds who are not talking. You need to get into therapy right away. Worst thing you can do is to just let them zone out on electronics all day. Got to start working with them. And if you're in an area where you can get good programming, you need to get the child into a good early program. They need about 20 hours a week. And in my early program, the emphasis was on learning to speak. Really, 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 really important. And the teachers need to slow down when they talk, because when people talk too fast, it went into gibberish. Slow down when you talk to the kid. Always encourage the child to use their language and give them time to respond. So in my early intervention program that started at 2.5, and I had severe symptoms, no speech until age 4, was very, very severe looking. Good news is there was no sign of epilepsy. That was the good news. So in my program, we worked on speech. We worked on how to wait and take turns at games. Very important for kids to learn that. And then the other thing, skills, eating with utensils, getting dressed, doing skills. There was no emphasis on eye contact. I think little kids just way too much emphasis on that. It loads the brain processor that's really slow. So speech, skills, and how to wait and take turns at games. And the kids should love going to therapy. It should be fun and be getting progress. That's a good early childhood.
So what about, you know, sometimes parents are concerned on the early childhood, like if they're doing full-time ABA, that they're losing momentum educationally. So do you have a, you know, kind of a thought or a preference on full-time ABA, or are, you know, basically focus on the speech and get them talking and then address the educational side of things, even if it's delayed?
Well, I think that I had kind of ABA stuff done with me when I was very young. That was phased out pretty much by the time I was 5. And there's such a thing as you can do too much therapy. The thing I always ask parents, is the child progressing? Are you getting speech, turn taking, and skills like putting on clothes, eating with utensils, brushing their hair, those sorts of things? Now, there's some old bad ABA that was really bad, but then there's other ABA done that is really good. And they get good progress. Now, I don't like the fact that private equity is buying up ABA clinics because they want to get money out of the insurance companies. Because there's a point where this, for a fully verbal kid, that the really strict kind of ABA stuff needs to be phased out. You don't have to do that anymore.
Okay. For sure. And someone asked us to do full screen. And the reason we are in the mode that we are today for this webinar is at Temple's request that we don't crash her internet. She has a persnickety internet, and she's afraid if we did the full screen on the pictures that it would go down. And
takes half an hour to reboot the router. It's a real mess.
For sure. So I just wanted to let people know that. So okay, let's talk about...
One of the things I want to talk about is interrupting. That is a problem I still have. I have a slow processor speed. That's why you have to wait for the kid to respond. And I can't get the timing right of when to break in. I know I interrupt. I know it's rude. And that's due to slow processing speed.
Well, that is okay. It's certainly understandable. No worries there. And a lot of our kids, again, on the autism spectrum or ADHD, we see that a lot as well. We've got a lot of questions surrounding the best redirection on rage or anger, and how, you know, like, for instance, regulating emotions and then bringing some of the things down, because some, you know, some families are experiencing rage. I know, you know, in our previous meeting, you kind of talked about the cry room. I remember you talking about the cry room, but do you have any pro tips for parents to bring down some of these escalating situations that they may have with their child, whatever age they might be?
All right, let's talk about elementary school. The rule is very simple. You throw a temper tantrum, There's no TV for one night. And very calmly applied. They didn't yell at me saying, I'm going to take the TV away when I was pitching a fit. Yet, the teacher would call home and say, well, Temple was kicking and screaming on the floor. And I will just say, there's no TV tonight. Now, I got in a lot of trouble in high school. I threw a book at a girl and got kicked out of high school. And because she was calling me a retard. Now, what I had to do in high school with anger is I had to switch from anger to crying. And I still was miserable, but I did have friends who shared interests. I had friends horseback riding, model rocket club. A good way for autistic kids to have friends is shared interests. One kid might be doing well being in the school band. That would be a shared interest. But I when I'd be out on a meatpacking plant job and something bad happened, I used to go hide in the electrical room. I didn't go in the bathroom. Somebody would see me there. And or go down under the basement stairs or someplace like that. But I'll let you know, NASA space scientists cried on 60 Minutes when their shuttle was shut down. Because crybabies get to have cool jobs at NASA. People that throw tools, NASA fires instantly, period. They have no tolerance for that. So that's how I dealt with anger. I switched it from anger to crying. You don't get in trouble
And
for
how
that.
did you know to do that? So
It just
that's a
happened.
perfect
It
example.
just happened.
Okay.
It just happened. And I was about 15, 16 years old. It just
And so
happened.
then that kind of some of it is the maturity. And I think that, for a lot of parents, our kids are 2 to 4 years and sometimes even, more, behind their peers from a maturity level. They look the part. They As far as their age, but as far as the developmental perspective, the way a 16-year-old processes anger, if they're really functioning as a 13-year-old or a
Now that's right.
14-year-old, it's a little bit different for sure. So some of the re so do you have any thoughts on the redirections? Like so, a lot of our families have kids and they experience big emotions and big meltdowns.
All right,
So you came to
let's look
crying
at
on
the
your own.
cause of meltdowns. Are they in a sensory overload situation like a super busy Walmart? Or a restroom that's got all kinds of flushers going off, hand dryers going off at random. Is it happening in that kind of situation? The other thing, if you have a nonverbal person, I'm not talking about a 3-year-old here, but an older nonverbal individual, they might have a hidden painful medical problem they cannot tell you about. And one of the most common ones is acid reflux and stomach hurts. They can't tell you about That can cause a lot of problems.
Underlying GI issues is a common thing that we've heard a lot about in both autism and ADHD, that when you improve the gut, that a lot of the other symptoms also improve. It doesn't mean that they're all going to go away, but there is a gut relation to
Oh,
autism and
definitely.
ADHD.
Definitely there is. And so you have to figure out what's causing it. Now, since noisy places can be a big problem, some people are wearing headphones. But the problem is, if you wear headphones all the time, it'll make the brain more sensitive. Actually, it'll make it worse. Now, it's fine to put the headphones on for some really awful situations like these bathrooms with just all this automated stuff going off. Yeah, that's a place where you can have the headphone on an airplane. You're not on an airplane every day. I don't want any trouble on an airplane. So that's a place that you can wear a headphone. But the thing you can have the kid do is have it with them. Always have it with you. Control. Then there's some sounds where they're sound sensitive, like a vacuum cleaner, where if you let the child control the vacuum cleaner, where they turn it on and off, they can actually learn to tolerate it. And it might go to a favorite plaything. I've seen that happen. See, that's being able to control. A noisy thing.
So maybe having the whole headphones is basically a safety blanket, or for the individual to know, I have a path. I have something that I can help myself if I'm starting to feel overloaded. That they have a takeaway. That's good. So before we move on from anger, I want you to give us some pro tips on redirection. So, you know, big meltdowns. Talk to us about any ideas that you have of bringing some of this heightened anger down in the moment.
Well, one of the things is just get them out of the situation where they can chill. And it's going to take 20 minutes to calm down. That's 20 minutes for a person to calm down. If you've ever had a near car accident, I had a board that one time fly off a trailer when I was driving on the freeway. And it took me 20 minutes to calm down after that. Same thing with animals. So, you know, give them a chance to calm down. And on the other hand, I want to try to prevent it. You know, go chill out before you have an anger episode. And then when I was a little kid, as long as it wasn't the only exception they made to taking the TV away is when we went on a ferry boat, this super loud horn of the boat, and I flung myself on the deck floor, and then they let me ride in the cabin down below. They did not punish me for that. That was clearly sensory overload.
We had a webinar.
What's causing the anger?
We had a webinar with licensed clinical psychologist Lindsay Asawa a week or two ago for the ADHD support group. And that webinar, she gave tips about bringing things down, about slowing breathing. She gave like good. Real tips. I thought it
well,
was really
good.
Great.
That's good. I would follow those tips. That's really,
yeah,
really good.
In the course of an hour, she really just gave things that you can implement in your home right away that, like, I was thinking, huh, why didn't I think of that? I mean,
all right,
really,
I want to
really
answer
good.
This
Okay.
question about an obsession with an elevator. Oh, that can turn into a great career. Let's learn how they work. You become an elevator mechanic, you will have a job for life. AI, artificial intelligence, not going to replace that. Broaden it. Now you got to learn how elevators work. There's physics involved. There's electrical circuits involved. There's pulleys involved. There's hydraulics involved. Take that and broaden it. Well, I'd be jumping for joy if my kid's obsessed with elevators, because that's something that can go right straight into a career.
That's, you know, I've heard you speak about that before, and you've really, you know, talk about finding what they're great at. So who cares if they're not great at math? You can't do algebra, but what are they great at? What are they interested in? And exploring those areas deeper, getting them immersed in that, getting an apprenticeship or kind of a, you know.
I want to talk about the different kinds of mind, my visual thinking book, because autism, I'm talking about fully verbal, you know, you get older kids, teens, and adults. My kind of mind, I think completely in pictures. That's shown clearly in HBO movie. That's shown really, really, really clearly. And the kinds of jobs I would be good at, fixing elevators, anything mechanical. The visual thinker who can't do math, can't do algebra, is going to be very, very good with mechanical things, fixing cars, art, photography, and working with animals. Then you have your visual, spatial, music, and math thinker. These kids are going to think in patterns. They're going to be chemists, physicists, computer programmers. Now, I've heard about three really bad cases in three different schools where little fourth and third graders got anger issues and things like that because they were forced to do baby math and they should have been moved ahead. That's the kid that needs that algebra book that you can rescue out of the attic. They should be moved ahead and not forced to do baby math. That causes an anger issue. And I've just run into three cases of this in the last 3 weeks. Real, real, real recent. Yeah, you give them more advanced math books. Then you get your word type autistic. These are the ones that memorize all their favorite, all the soccer players or something like this, or movies. And they're very good at specialized retail jobs where selling new cars has been successful, sporting goods, financial products, specialized business insurance, where they're recognized for knowledge of a specialized product. They can be very, very good in that kind of sales to help people get the right product for them. Because we got to try to, how are we going to get into jobs? There's a lot of questions here about independence transfer to adulthood. And one of the things I'm seeing with the fully verbal autistics is the parents do everything for them. 14-year-olds, 16-year-olds who have never gone shopping. They're not learning basically. They've never ordered food in a restaurant. They don't have a bank account. They're not learning basic life skills, doing laundry, things like this, learning basic life skills. It's a real problem. So how do we make that transition to work? Ideally, we need to find something to replace the childhood paper routes, because I talk to grandparents all the time, and they have good careers. Now, learning about their autism later in life helps them with their relationships, but that grandparent had a paper route when they were 11. So now we need to find a replacement for that. Things like walking the neighbor's dog. They've got to learn how to do a task on a schedule where family's not the boss. A church volunteer job. These things, and a reason why I recommend these two things, they cost nothing to implement. They can be done in the lowest income families. And then when we get into the job world, let's get them jobs. All right, there's two simple accommodations you need. Let's keep them out of the McDonald's takeout window lunchtime chaos of Molita. Don't put them there. There's too
Starbucks,
much traffic
another
volume.
example. Yes.
Then the other thing, other kinds of jobs, let's say we're instructing them how to close out a cash register. Give them a pilot's checklist. Step one, step two, step three. Long strings of verbal instruction don't work. Replace that with checklists, just like pilots use. Pilots are required to use it. Those two simple things will save a lot of jobs, because I cannot remember
So
long sequential verbal information.
what about obsessions with measuring things, depth and height, and the degrees of things? Do you have any examples
How
of
old
good
a kid are
jobs
we
for
talking
that?
about here? Well, yeah, if it's a
Let's
little kid
look.
measuring things, let's go build some stuff. You have to measure stuff for that. You want to take a
That's a great
fixation and
idea.
expand it. All right, let's measure something. They're taking shop. You have to measure stuff. Let's expand it. A kid likes cars. Let's read about them. Let's find out how they work. Broaden the fixation. Let's draw a, let's say they're measuring stuff in the house. Let's draw a floor plan of the house with all your measurements. In other words, expand it, because that
I
stuff can
think of
improve.
Grant Eco Art, and he's on the spectrum, and he's well known across the country. He was from Texas. He's not here anymore, and he had an obsession with tearing paper,
Now he
and
makes art
like
out of
just
torn
tearing
paper. He makes art now out of torn paper. That's what Grant's doing.
beautiful art out of torn paper. Grant Eco Art, check him out. So okay,
Yeah,
so
he's
we've got
good.
another question. What is the most important lesson or advice from your lifetime would you give to parents that have someone who has an intellectual disability? I mean, what is the, if you had one top piece of advice that you would give parents, what would
Let's
that be?
have emphasis on what the child can do. I was reading a galley proof for a book called Capable, and this was very, very disabled, and getting him to turn his head was difficult for him. Okay, that's something he can do. We have to look at what they can do rather than what they can't do, and even the there's some nonverbal individuals that can learn how to type independently. We need to be encouraging that. Let's encourage them on life skills. Too often, too many things are done for them. I see the whole shopping thing. I wish I didn't have to talk about getting teenagers who are fully verbal shopping. I was doing that when I was 7 and 8 years old. And I was given 50 cents a week to go spend on comics and candy, and I learned how to save money. I wanted a 69-cent airplane. I had to save for 2 weeks.
Right. When do you think, so you had started this off talking about early childhood. Do you have an opinion of how parents should communicate to their child that they have autism, or a time frame of when, like how old were you when you knew that you were on the spectrum?
Well, most probably, you see, when I first was diagnosed, I didn't even know what autism was. They just labeled me as brain damage, because that would have been in 1949. I didn't really fully understand it until I was a teenager. You know, and then you get interested, you tell your kid, if your kid's doing just great and has friends, you probably don't need to tell them. I want to address this question here about picky eating. I'm very, very concerned about vitamin deficiencies. I just talked to one mom and her kid got scurvy. It was a young adult. That's vitamin C deficiency. And so if you have a real picky eater, they need to get a high quality multiple vitamin to prevent the deficiency diseases. And sometimes you can get them to eat new things by getting them involved in food preparation. And they can go play with it all they want in the kitchen. The dining room, we're going to have manners, but in the kitchen, you can play with food. And that sometimes helps.
Good. What about communication tips for our families that their child may be nonverbal? You had talked before about, maybe minimizing some of the meltdowns because a lot of the meltdowns are stemming from an unmet need or an undiagnosed medical condition that they can't communicate. Do you have tips or communication devices for the nonverbal?
Well, there's a lot of communication devices, you know, sign language, picture boards. There's all kinds of electronic devices that you can get. You've got to give a nonverbal a way to communicate. I can remember the frustration not being able to communicate. I was 5 years old. I could talk, but I was slow getting it out. And we had this little assignment where I had to mark all the pictures began with B as in beautiful. So I marked a suitcase down for B for bag. And they didn't give me a chance to explain in our house, suitcases were called bags. And that was hugely, hugely frustrating. Now, the thing is, how do you
For
figure out
sure.
how a person with autism thinks? Well, the visual thinkers tend to gravitate towards Legos and art. The mathematical kids gravitate towards math, and they're good with Legos, and the word thinkers gravitate towards words.
So one thing that you taught me was the progression. So like we start out young. And we're playing with Legos. You've got a child that likes to build something, and you talked about having tools in your hand at a young age. It's graduating from those Legos, and whether it's an Erector set or something
Okay,
along
I'm
those
not.
lines, and getting
I'm
tools.
seeing too many kids that don't graduate from Legos. Kids that probably should go into fixing elevators. And I've been on very questionable elevators lately that I know are not getting fixed.
So that definitely makes sense. So what about the extreme fears that some of our kids have? One person mentioned that her child is terrified about college, yet he's an amazing student. Do you have any tips and advice for overcoming fears, whatever they may be? And maybe earlier, the earlier question, maybe that individual's child is deathly afraid of elevators. Like, how do you go
You
about overcoming?
make the scary thing interesting. You know what I used to be afraid of? Airplanes. When I was a senior in high school, I was on a very scary emergency landing. We had to go down the slides. And then I got a chance to ride in a plane full of Holstein heifers and got to sit in the cockpit. That made aviation interesting. Make scary things interesting. Learn more about how elevators work and that they have mechanisms so it's not going to fall down the shaft. And take the scary thing and make it interesting. That can help.
So talk to us about like when it comes to, we have a lot of questions today about transition. So older kids, what are some recommendations that you have for students and parents as far as preparing for college while in high school or even younger? What are some steps and interventions that you suggest?
Well, then there was a question here in the chat is whether they should go to college. You know, that you see, the college is going to be more difficult if they have to live there. That's a bigger change than if they go to a community college. I think there's a lot of students. We're going to community college for the first 2 years is a good option because I didn't realize how lucky I was to go to a small college until I went to Arizona State for my master's and I watched 500 students line up to register for an English class. I'm so glad I was not involved in that. The other thing that can help is visit the website again to make it less scary. The other big mistake that a lot of kids make in college is when they get into trouble in the class, they don't ask for help soon enough. I failed my first math quiz. I did something about it. And then you've got a kid that maybe ought to go the skilled trades route. And these jobs are, electricians. I worked with metal workers that built equipment for me that had multiple patents. I'm talking high-end skilled trades. These jobs are not going to get replaced by computers. Elevators are mechanical devices, and they're not going to be anti-gravity anytime soon. They're going to need people to fix them.
Temple,
We have a huge shortage right now.
we often talk about VR, vocational rehab, and that is available in every state, not just in
Yes,
our
that's right.
state. Vocational rehab, which is it is for individuals who have a disability that is an impediment to employment. It is
Yeah.
state and federally funded. It's a free program to help close the gap on impediments to employment. So that is one. And what I like to mention to people is that this program is available as early as age 14. So you
Yeah.
can get your child going on these transition steps and things like that early with vocational rehab. There are also registered apprenticeships through the Department of Labor for individuals with
Yes.
disabilities. So there's a lot of programs that are out there. And then the last thing that I wanted to mention on to go to college or not to go to college. I think that there is a myth in a lot of people's minds that if a person has an intellectual disability, that they're not going to higher education. And what I want you to know, and we do webinars on this very specific topic, there are college programs all across the country for individuals who have an intellectual disability. And they may be a certificate program, they may teach them a trade like horticulture like hotel, hospitality industry and things like that. But there are a lot of really, really great programs. And just higher education doesn't necessarily mean it has to be a 4-year degree. So I just want to encourage
Yeah,
families to
that's right.
know that there are programs. And a lot of these programs, they don't have as many slots. So you want to research these early because they only take so many because
That's
the
right.
smaller class size is better. So you definitely want to research these early. So I've got a question for you. So do you have any, thoughts for like typical signs of autism, perhaps very high functioning in girls or young women? Any particular signs that might be an indicator that a person might need to go get some more testing?
Well, one of the problems with some young women is they want a relationship so bad, they sometimes get into abusive relationships. That can be a problem. But a real basic principle with autistic people is friends who shared interests. That's really, really important. Most of my friends, like, we talk about autism, we talk about animal behavior, we talk about building stuff. Oh, I sometimes sit next to some construction person on a plane. We have a great flight. Geeking out on building electrical transmission towers. That was a great flight. Like, can you remember where I was seated on
So,
the airplane? It was in the bulkhead. It was a great big huge aircraft. We were in the setup. It was in the bulkhead, in an economy, in a big aircraft that had a middle row of seats.
like with some of the other characteristics, so you said seeking out on maybe dangerous relationships. Are there any other signs or factors that you might consider in
Well,
young women?
they often know it isn't as obvious. It isn't as obvious. And for some young women, it's a very, trying to see, I have a slow processor speed, so I can't follow fast chit chat conversations. And a lot of the real social kind of conversations and those kind of conversations. So they work really, really hard. The mask, that's real tiring. And I don't do bar scene or any of that kind of stuff. Basically, what's given me a full life has been having an interesting career.
So, and speaking of that, you've talked about obviously things in your childhood have changed on how what people do for fun, and we got outside and we
Yeah,
played
that's
and
right.
we ran around and we tinkered on things and stuff. Do you have any suggestions for a 27-year-old to help get them to move away from the computer into more brain stimulating activities or outside activities? Some of our kids have real addictions to gaming and things like that. How do we get them to move away from that into more productive things that are going to help them in their life?
You have to replace the video games with something more productive. And there's been some very, very good successes with automobile mechanics. I know five or six adults, they just slowly introduced auto mechanics, and now they're working in that field. There's a program called TACT in Denver, where they have kind of a career fair where young autistic adults can try out cybersecurity, car mechanics, carpentry, welding, a bunch of different trades. And then they have a two-semester class, six students per class, with both a mechanic teacher and a life coach teacher. And then they're placed in car dealerships that they contract with about a 70% success rate. And they put, sorry, job coach in the getting over a cold in the car dealership for a couple of months. But and then I've talked to some of these young adults, and they said to me, cars are a lot more interesting. Motors are more interesting than video games. And I, for my kind of thinker, skilled trades are a really, really good way to go. I worked with so many skilled trades people that were just brilliant visual thinkers that were autistic, dyslexic, ADHD. I spent 25 years in heavy construction. Oh, the most fun I ever did.
That is, and so basically, it's just getting out there. There was a good question. It's a three part. What are three ways a parent can support their neurodiverse autistic child throughout their lives, no matter what their age? And I think the word is support. You talk about that a lot of parents are over supporting or helicoptering or whatever. And so they're not allowing their kids to get out there and experience some of the, you had some tough hits. I mean, you had some personally, learning life lessons is how it helped you grow. So tell us three ways that parents could help support their children any age.
Well, you have to give the right amount of support. And there's some accommodations that are needed. You don't want to have a parent hover where the kid's not learning shopping. That's ridiculous for a child that's fully verbal. You have to gradually let them have some independence, and you do it gradually. Maybe the first shopping they do, you might go up to the front of the store and park. You're right there, a small shop, and run in and buy something, and you're right there. You're not going to send them across to the other end of the mall. You see, I see that. We do it in baby steps. And but there's a tendency to get so locked into the label. The things they're not learning is just terrible. They're driving. If I hadn't learned to drive, I would not have been in the cattle industry. It's going to take a lot longer. More time practicing in a very safe place, like a big open deserted parking lot, an open field, back country roads. These very safe places are where you start, and you're going to need more practice there before you do traffic. Driver's ed sometimes pushes them into traffic way too fast. Nope, my aunt's mailbox was 3 miles away, so for 6 weeks I dove up and back to the mailbox. That was over 200 miles of driving, a dirt road to mailbox. And when I first started, we started in the middle of the horse pasture. So if the car lurched, there was nothing to hit. It's going to take longer because I have to get the driving of the vehicle into motor memory before you touch traffic.
That's good. One thing I'd like to mention on that and driving, because some of our kids will drive and some of them definitely won't, but for
Yeah.
families that are interested in that, there are disability driving services specifically behind the wheel training for individuals with neurodiversity, ADHD brains, autism brains.
Yeah.
Also, your local hospital. So I know that there's people, attending all across the country, and some have more resources in their area than others. But local hospitals typically have a stroke test that they do. So if a person has had a stroke, to see if they are going to be safe to get back on the road, there's testing at the local hospital that you can do prior to doing any behind the wheel that will test the faculties of your child and how quick they think and their processing speed, and do they have the faculties needed to be safe behind the wheel? And that will kind of give you an idea of if you should pursue the disability driving training. But I know for us that we did that, and it was very, very helpful, and it gave us a lot of information. Let's talk about thinking before we speak. There is quite a few questions on helping a child grasp and learn to think a little bit more before they speak. And I know that you've had some trouble with that in
Yeah.
your younger years. How did you overcome that, and what advice can you give to parents and coaching their kids on this topic? Because
Well,
this is where our kids lose
I
friends,
think I
right?
would need to do in a see a granddads come up to me all the time, and they discover they're on the autism spectrum when they get older. And they discover it when their kids get diagnosed. And how did a granddaddy get a decent job, or grandmother get a decent job, and the kid isn't? Well, in my generation, social skills were taught in a much more structured manner. And I call it teachable moments. And grown-ups corrected little kids no matter where you went. Instead of screaming no when you did something wrong, they tell you what you should do. All right, let's say I pushed in line at the supermarket or the movie theater. People would say to me, my mother would say, you have to wait your turn to get the ticket. You have to wait your turn to check out. They give you the instruction. And that's the thing. So the kid does, let's say, look at the fat lady or something like that. You need to just say to the child, it's very rude to make comments like that about people. Please do not do that. You give the instruction. Give the instruction instead of screaming no.
That makes a lot of sense.
And that's what
That
was
is.
standard 50s upbringing. You give the instruction.
Do you have any advice for families that have older kids, maybe they're 15, maybe older, that are mostly nonverbal? Do you think that they may still develop language? We had some questions on that. Or do you have any other additional tips for fostering that language development further, even if they're in their teen years?
In the teen years, there are a few rare cases where they do develop language, but most do not. But all right, let's work on the things they can develop. Typing independently. And you need to use a tablet. This is really important. Laptops do not work. And this desktop won't work. See, I have to look way down here. The keyboard's way, way, way down here. The print's going to appear way up here. They cannot make the attention shift. They just cannot do it. So you have to use a tablet. And then that print appears right next to the virtual keyboard or a little device. It's a keyboard, a little screen, and the print appears right next to the keyboard. And some people have learned on phones. I think phones are too small. But tablets, just regular tablet. Even one that's half broken, if the text messaging program still works, then you can put it in airplane mode so they can't send messages. But that some can learn to type. Some have a good brain trapped in there, and they describe problems with not being able to control their movements, sensory scrambling in the visual system. There's some very good books like Tito Macapadahay, How Can I Talk If My Lips Don't Move? How Can I Talk If My Lips Don't Move? And then there's a sequel book The Reason I Jump by the Japanese boy. And he says, sometimes my carers would just help me too much. I felt like I was a broken robot and I couldn't control my movements. Those books are must reads.
Those are
And
really
again, a
good.
lot of insight from those books. They're all available on Amazon. I think the Tito book is only in an e-book now, but you can still get it.
Somebody
How
put
talk.
say those books one more time, and somebody type those in the chat
All
box
right.
for us. Say those one more time.
How can I talk if my lips don't move? And don't ask me how to spell muckapatay because I can't. Now, the best New York Times bestseller is The Reason I Jump by the Japanese boy. Now, there's a sequel that's a better book. And I can never remember the title right. It's something like Fall Down Five Times, Get Up Eight. It's a sequel to The Reason I Jump by Noki, the Japanese boy. And I like the sequel
Thank
better.
you.
It's older and has a lot more insights.
What advice do you have with getting out of overwhelming negative loop and or messages that continually bombard the brain? Can you give us some, some help on that?
You're talking about text messages here or thoughts?
No. I'm just talking about those thoughts, those reoccurring negative thoughts that paralyze an individual. Do you have some ideas or tips for parents to work with the kid that has that replaying
Okay, how old a kid?
terrible thoughts going through their head? Let's just say they're teenagers. I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, some of that is a high, really high anxiety makes those thoughts go. And in my book, Thinking in Pictures, I discuss my experiences with antidepressant medication in very low doses. That stops a lot of that. Exercising, getting more interest in different things. You know, you could worry about something really ridiculous, like a meteorite might fall on your house. Yeah, that's happened, but it's so rare that you're just about done. Don't have to worry about it. Like, it'll be
So
more
I
likely
would
to fall
say
down the
again,
stairs.
I would say again that that webinar with Dr. Lindsay Asawa on addressing some of these anxiety and kind of some of that looping behavior, I think were again very, very helpful.
Well, another book that
Where
would help out
were
some of the sensory issues is the autistic brain. I have a whole chapter in here just on sensory issues.
Really great. Thank you for sharing that. And your books are available on Amazon,
Yeah, everything's
correct?
available on Amazon. And then The Reason
Awesome.
I
We can get
Jump,
everything on
you have The Reason
Amazon
I Jump, but there's
nowadays.
a sequel to The Reason I Jump that's even better. And it's got a funny title. I can never say it right, but it's like Fall Down Five Times, Get Up Seven, something like that, the title. And it's the sequel to The Reason I Jump. And Noki is older and has a lot more insight.
When you were quoted as saying, autism is a very important part of who I am, but I don't let it totally define me. About how old were you when you said that?
Well, I was definitely a full-fledged adult, and I don't remember exactly when I said that, but it would have been 30s or 40s, probably.
Sure. Okay. What about personal space? Sometimes the lack of understanding of personal space. Do you have any suggestions for parents to work with their kids on not violating other people's personal space?
You just have to train them with teachable moments. You say, now you're getting too close to, Aunt Anne. You again give the instruction. Do it with teachable moments, and you do it in the moment. And
Really good.
you give the instruction on what they should do. Okay, like get right up. Okay, let's say here's a mistake. Okay, let's say we're trying to find a place to sit at the airport. If there's plenty of seats, you don't sit right next to somebody. Now, if it's totally crowded, then I gotta sit next to somebody. You just explain that. Now, there's plenty of
That's really
space, you don't sit next to somebody. If they're totally crowded, then you have to sit next to somebody.
A lot of our kids don't have friends, or they make friends and they lose them quickly. And a lot of our kids are struggling with loneliness and isolation. And you had mentioned earlier that, you know, finding like-minded people or getting them involved with, if they like airplanes, finding a group that works with airplanes and finding other people that have similar interests to them, which in theory, that sounds really great. And it seems, you know, like that's a no-brainer. But how do we go about finding these people? Our kids are reeling and they feel alone. And,
all right, well,
and
let's just think about, you got a music and math mind, kid, a chess club, school band. That's been very successful for some kids that are musically inclined. The school play. These are all things that are right there. Making scenery for the school play was one of the things I liked doing. Making costumes. That's been a shared interest right there in the school. It's everywhere. I talked to a family at the train station at the Houston airport just the other day. His nine-year-old was having the greatest time doing model railroading. And all the people that are in that field are old, but those granddaddies just loved that kid. That was right there, an opportunity. They're everywhere. You just, an art class. Put them in an art class. Now, there's horses, you know, those are often not available. For me, it was riding horses, doing art together. I've got kids' books that, like Calling All Minds, get them outside doing stuff. I have another book called The Outdoor Scientist. 4-H clubs. FFA is a great program for high school students. Fantastic program. Learn welding, learn public speaking. Friends who shared interests. There's all kinds of opportunities. They're right there and you're just not seeing them.
Just getting out there. So I know that we're running out of time today. We have a few more, but I want to ask, there were two questions. First, you talked about in your book, Thinking in Pictures, you mentioned that Ritalin was not helpful to those with autism. Could you talk more about that?
Well, it's mainly, you see, autism and ADHD get mixed up all the time. There's about a third of the symptoms that cross over. Well, you see, an autistic person that's so like that, the Ritalin may help them. But more nonverbal autism, it definitely makes worse. You see, this is the problem. These diagnostic categories are not distinct. They're not distinct. Now, the thing is, if you try Ritalin, you're going to know in one day whether it's good or bad. You'll know instantly. Now, while we're talking about medication, this way too many drugs are given out like candy to little kids. I think it's just disgusting. I've talked to parents with kids on 7 or 8 drugs. No thought went into it. Heavy duty drugs, you know, like the antipsychotics that can, you know, risperidone and stuff like that, they've got bad side effects like weight gain and tardive dyskinesia, which is shaking. Way too many. But on the other hand, I can't be against drugs. Because I've been on antidepressants since my early 30s, and they saved me. And if you want to read about that, I really recommend reading the chapter and Thinking in Pictures about that, reading that whole chapter, not just trying to sell you a book, but that will give you the information to think about it. And you use low doses. The doses on the label are too high for treating anxiety. It's starter dose or lower, Prozac or Zoloft or something like that.
That is good advice, and I know medication is a common topic that comes up all the time. When it comes to stem cell research and the kind of changes in medical sciences, do you believe we're on the brink of something and curing autism with stem cells, or do you have any thoughts on stem cell research?
I haven't read anything to show that's useful. I'd rather spend the money on teaching and something like that. The other thing is, autism in its milder forms is a personality variant. And I don't think we'd have this computer right now, this Zoom connection and all this stuff, if we hadn't had some autistic brains to invent it. And I'm saying that very, very seriously. The milder forms is simply a personality variant. It's a true continuous trait. similar to height. It's another example of a true continuous trait.
Is there ever a time where you pretended not to be autistic?
Well, I try to have good behavior, be polite. Manners. I don't think basic manners is masking. I didn't, when I was at the University of Illinois, when I was in my early 30s and 40s, people thought I was stuck up because I didn't say hi in the hallway. Well, that's an easy thing to teach somebody to do. So I started doing that. That was easy to do. No, that's not masking. It's just basic manners.
What is your thought on, like the autonomy of an adult with autism and living outside of their family home and maybe a semi-independent living or maybe a, I don't like to use the word residential living, place. I mean, there's a lot of places all across the country that individuals with adults. Individuals with autism live. When is there a timing, a time frame that you think it's more effective? Do you feel like our kids grow more effectively once they are able to leave,
Well, it
the
depends
comforts of
upon
under
their.
our own roof?
Well, you've got some individuals that are never going to live independently, but they can learn to do more things than you may think they can do. See, this is the problem with autism. We're going from Einstein, but no speech at age three, to somebody that has epilepsy and other neurological problems on top of autism. And it's questionable whether autism is the correct diagnosis. It was a diagnosis to get services, I think, in some cases. So you got this huge continuum, and the verbal thinker tends to lump them all together. And there are some people that definitely ought to be living independently and doing a lot more independent stuff. What you want to do is, if you're going to, the transition to independence should be gradual. Sudden changes are bad. It should be gradual. I suggested to some parents that maybe, your son could spend a few nights in a hotel room. In other words, make it less sudden.
We a lot of the places like transition programs, they have day programs where you could come, 2, 3, 4 days a week, maybe 5 days a week. A lot of the programs have summer programs. So there are a lot of ways that you can dip your toe in early
Yes.
to kind of test the waters on it. So I think the gradual is really, really good advice. And one of the pieces of advice that we give is explore those options early. Some of the places across the country have 3 to 5 year waiting lists. So you might decide you want to do something and then you can't because the waiting list is so long. But so explore those options, get them involved in those transition programs. We're really, from a transition perspective, trying to avoid them coming home, leaving the high school, whatever mode of school, homeschool, public school, private school, whatever, and coming
Well, now,
home
fine, let me just
and
interrupt
doing
about the
nothing.
schools. I don't want to argue about private versus public, but I have found it's site specific. That's an engineering term that I really like. The particular school, the particular people, the particular parents, they get along, things can just work great. It's the particular people involved that make a school work. One parent said, "Oh, my kid's in band at the local high school. It's just fantastic." That'd be a public school, or my kid is, it was in this school and it was terrible. They won't let him take higher math. I'll tell you what I would have done in that school. I'd just get an algebra book and just give it to the kid and let him do what all the other kids do their, their simpler math. Sometimes you just do something and you get a mission.
And we're basically out of time for today, but when from a perspective of transitioning, there is a lot of help and support for your kids out there on the spectrum. Again, with vocational rehab, there are such things and workforce solutions, summer earn and learn programs,
A
pre-employment
lot of
training
stuff out there,
services.
and join local support groups. Talk to other parents. I'll tell you one thing you don't want to do is let your kid age out. And they call that jumping off the service cliff. You don't want to let that happen. And the transition needs to be gradual. See, things like shopping by myself when I was a young kid is part of, independence.
That's
Getting
yeah,
the
that is
paper
really
route
good.
substitutes. The paper route substitutes around age 11, like the church volunteer jobs, walking the neighbor's dog. These would all be things start making that independence, doing it gradually.
And knowing that there is support such as job coaches, maybe your loved one could work in a sorting facility and they would love doing sorting. I mean, there's all kinds of things out there. So getting involved, knowing that these VR programs start as early as age 14 is important. Your schools have a VR counselor. So you can check about VR with your school and find out who your VR counselor is and kind of getting them plugged in that way. If your child is already out of school, there are VR services for kids that are out of school, for adults that are out of school as well. So, Timbal, as usual, you were amazing. And and thank you to everyone who sent in your questions ahead of time. These questions were amazing. We definitely didn't get to all of them, but we covered many of them. And so I'd like to thank each and every one of you for your direct questions that you sent in ahead of time. Guys, we are an advisory and consulting firm specifically for special needs. We can help you on the planning perspective. We do have a YouTube channel, the Consolidated Planning Group YouTube channel. There are over 300 webinars on topics on planning for special needs. You name it, it is absolutely out there. We have higher education, we have transition, we have VR, we have a psychologist on managing emotions and anxiety and things like that. Special needs trust, guardianship, you name it, it is out there. So do check that out. Temple, we will look forward to partnering with you again soon and address some of these additional questions. And we are hoping to have an in-person event with Temple later this year when she is in Texas. So thanks,
Well,
everyone. Hope everybody
it's
has a
been great
great
to
day.
talk to
Thank you again.
everybody, and the thing is, there's more opportunities than around than you'd know. Get involved with local support groups so you can talk to other parents. I'll just give you an example. Okay, I'm working with a group right now on I'm working on helping autistic kids traverse the airport. Well, you've got to they some airports have practice. You can do practice at the airport. And I learned the Minneapolis airport does that, and I learned it on a Zoom call. Another parent wrote in the chat and said, "Well, Minneapolis airport does that." This is where that's just one parent to another, and then we got talking about a school or something for another kid, and a parent, put up their comment. You see, and I think it's also good to go to some of these support groups in person. I found that after COVID, going back for after a year of being grounded. Going back to live meetings was, there's things you get out of live meetings you don't get out of Zoom.
That's for sure. That's for sure. Well, thanks
Any
so
other
much,
things?
everyone. It's certainly been our pleasure.
Don't get sucked into all kinds of weird, expensive stuff that doesn't work. That's the other
Yeah.
thing.
So
I'm very concerned
they're
about
playing
some of
on
the
the
stuff.
heartstrings of the parents that are hopeful and optimistic for intervention. And sometimes those are pretty expensive interventions that don't work. That is
Well, they
true.
don't work
Well,
is the
thanks.
problem. And they don't have evidence based. If something's expensive, possibly dangerous, or extremely time consuming, that's where I've got to have evidence based. But then there's things like for a subgroup of dyslexia, where you just try printing the book on here on the back of my Calling All Minds book, see the light blue paper there? Print the schoolwork on different pastel papers. Only it doesn't work for everybody, like tan, gray, pale pastel papers. I've had people go, "Oh, the print stopped jiggling. It's colored paper. Just go ahead and try it. It's not going to hurt you. Might just help you. And it doesn't cost hardly anything to try it." So that I don't need evidence based. But for some expensive, very expensive, possibly dangerous, extremely time consuming, yes, I want evidence based. That's the way I look at it.
Sure. Well, we're out of time for today. Thanks so much, everyone, for being here. Thank you, Temple. You were amazing, as usual.
And thank you. And,
our pleasure.
And it was really great to be here.
Thank you. Take care,
okay,
guys.
Goodbye.
Bye now.